Clearwater County's podcast delivers current, relevant municipal government educational content and is an ongoing conversation about the issues that matter to residents and businesses of Clearwater County. Our current special series, Doing Business in Clearwater County, showcases local businesses to help grow community connection and economic development. Listen as we interview local business owners, review emerging trends and challenges, and discuss future impacts to the county. All this and more on the Clearwater County podcast. Audio versions are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and other streaming services. Video versions are available on Clearwater County's YouTube channel and website. So welcome. I'm at the West Fraser LVO plant, and I'm talking with Tom and Bob about what's going on out here. So if you can do some introductions for yourselves, please.
Sure. My name's Tom Daniels. I'm the Woodlands Manager. I'm based out of Sundry.
Okay. My name's Bob Jekyll. I'm the General Manager out here at West Fraser LVL.
Okay. So West Fraser, it's actually a fairly large company spread all over North America. What does West Fraser do?
Go ahead. West Fraser does pretty much anything. They really started their business centered around dimensional lumber out in BC, and you know, over the years they've expanded to include pulp mills, MDF plants, plywood plants, the LVL plant as we see it right now, and they recently have acquired Norbord, which was a very large company which has divisions in BC, Alberta, throughout the, or some down the States, and some over in Europe as well, and some out in Eastern Canada. So it's grown to be a fairly large company, and they pretty much cover everything that that would be a wood product. So
okay, and what is the LVL plant? What does the LVL plant do?
At the LVL plant, we produce what's called laminated veneer lumber, hence the LVL, which is a veneer-based product that that is used for structural components in construction of single-family houses. Typically, it will be you know, a header above a window or above your garage door and stuff like that. And you do see it on Mike Holmes, and some of those guys use our product a lot as well. If you see a big beam and it's yellow, it's come from our place here.
Okay. I was fortunate enough to take a tour through here a few years ago, and I know some of the beams that come out here, they're really, really long.
When we initially make the product, we make what are called billets, and they're about 4 feet wide, and they can be up to 60 feet long, and they're anywhere from 1.5 to 3.5 inches thick. So yeah, that's a pretty big piece of wood.
And it can hold up a huge amount of weight when it's being put up in a building?
Yes, the benefit of the LVL is you can you make your open concept kitchens. You know, if it's used in floor system, you don't have to have, I don't know, the posts I used to run into as a kid down in the basement. You don't have to have all the posts and support beams and stuff like that. It can hold the structure up.
Those really interfere with your ping pong and pool games,
and your ball hockey down in the basement. Yeah,
it always changes the game. So that's what you produce here. The wood comes from the surrounding area in the forest management area. Tom, can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we have what's called a forest management agreement with the province of Alberta. It's a 20-year renewable agreement. Doesn't give us the rights to say, hey, this is our area, everybody else get out. All it does is it gives us rights and comfort that we have a reliable source of timber to run our mills. And a lot of things go along with that agreement. It's a 20-year renewable agreement. So there's a lot of management responsibilities that go with that. We have to develop a 20-year forest management plan. We have to harvest the timber sustainably, meaning that when we harvest a tree, we have to also replant a tree. So we spend a lot of time, we've got a lot of professionals on staff that their full-time job is basically making sure that we're properly managing that forest out there. And we're trying to manage the ecosystem even though we're not responsible for that ecosystem. And working with other stakeholders to make sure that what we can do, that our operations don't impact on people in a negative way. Not always possible, but certainly we can have conversations to see what we can do to get along out there.
And I understand while it may be a 20-year agreement with the province, you really have a much longer-term plan because you're planting trees that are not expected to be harvested for decades.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, so you know, when we look at a plan is really when we do our projections around timber supply. So how much timber can we harvest every year to make sure that we're sustainable? We look at a 200-year planning horizon. So essentially what we're doing is we're harvesting trees, growing trees, harvesting trees, growing trees to make sure that when we do those long-term projections that we're not depleting that forest resource. And so a lot of effort goes into that. It's quite a large document, fairly technical. And we're in the process right now. We've got a plan that we have to submit to the government in 2025. And we've already started work on that plan. And you know, we're 3 years ahead of the game, but there's a lot of effort that goes into that.
So how many people locally work in the forest harvesting area?
Yeah, so that number is hard to put a number on it just because there's people that work full-time and there's people that work temporarily. So what I mean by that, for example, we'll bring planters in and they'll start here. We're June 1st, probably towards the end of the month. We'll have probably about 120 planters throughout the forest management area. Our goal is we're going to plant 6.5 million seedlings this year. So they're going to be engaged for 6 weeks of doing that. Lots of logistics required around that, making sure that we're absolutely taking that tree from the nursery and we're planting it in the correct block, because our goal is to make sure that we're replanting what was there existing before we were harvest. So we've collected cones out of those blocks and we want to make sure that those trees go back into that cut block, because the genetics of that tree are already accustomed to the weather and soil conditions that are in that area. We don't own any equipment ourselves, so we hire people to build roads, to harvest the trees, to haul the trees, and there's probably in order of about 400 people on a full-time basis that are engaged in that. And then we've got lots of contracts that we have for people for road maintenance, putting signs up, a variety of different things, and so it's quite a busy place out there, but we rely on about 7 large contractors that are located in Rocky Mountain House, Caroline, and Sundry. And most of those have been with us for probably 20 years. So we've got a good fleet of contractors and we're really dependent upon those guys doing good work for us.
And Bob, how many people work here at the LVL plant?
At the LVL plant, currently we have about 140 people employed. And we're, you know, continually definitely looking for full-time employment people to come here and build careers and build lives within the community. That's hugely important to us.
There's a lot of long-term jobs.
Like there
people
is.
That work here for decades.
Yeah, I've been with West Fraser for 25 years. There's many people here that are, I'd say probably 70% of the people that are here have been here for more than 10 years. And a lot of them in upwards of 28 years.
And I'll make the comment of when it's minus 35 outside, working inside next to a really hot oven is probably not a terrible thing.
It's probably not that bad. That's definitely one of the benefits. And you know, having a consistent schedule that people can plan their lives around definitely makes these desirable jobs. And yeah.
Right. Cause most people who work here are able to be home in the evenings and weekends for their work, right?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, we do work shift work at night and weekends and stuff, but the way the shifts work, it gives people ample time off to do what they want. And we have many different shift schedules that people can fit into their lifestyle, for sure.
Nice. Now, we are on the edge of pine beetle area, especially towards the north. And we've over the last few years, we've seen some signs of them coming in. Is that impacting your forest management area?
Yeah, beetle has been a thing in Alberta since probably 1999. There was a wave of mountain pine beetle that came into southern Alberta, so south of Highway 3 back in the 80s. But it was kind of short-lived. The cold winters really took care of it. And as people know, we don't really get the cold snaps like we used to. But having said that, what we've seen is that there was a real flight coming into Alberta at around 2006, and it was mainly up in the Grand Prairie area, and subsequent flights into the Hinton Edson area, probably in 2011, 2012, and that beetle really took off. It was spreading throughout many of the areas in Alberta. It was actually transitioning from lodgepole pine, which is sort of the native type of tree that it would attack, and getting into jack pine. And if anybody's familiar with their, I don't know if it's grade 8 or grade 9 geography, that the boreal forest goes across northern Canada. And that boreal forest is dominated by jack pine. So lots of concern by the federal government, lots of concern by the Saskatchewan government, because the beetle was starting to expand its range into the jack pine forest. And what we found is that the lodgepole pine was the preferred species, but it really liked jack pine. And what it liked about jack pine is jack pine's never seen mountain pine beetle before. And the lodgepole pine in Alberta has never seen mountain pine beetle before. It's not natural to be here in Alberta, especially in an epidemic situation. Certainly we'll get some beetle coming in, what we call endemic, where it's kind of in the background, you don't really see it. But for epidemic populations to be found in Alberta, that's never been found in history. So we've got a beetle here that some would call invasive because it's not here naturally in Alberta, but it's just kind of a product of climate change. But having said all of that, we've had some cold. And the cold that we were getting, for example, in the fall or in the springtime is really what had an impact on the beetle. In the dead of winter, we need to have like minus 38 degrees consistently for about 2 weeks in order to kill that population. But if you get a minus 20 in the fall, let's say September, October, then that has a really good opportunity to kill off that population. But the population is very resilient. So you have to kill off 97.5% of that population, if that makes sense to people, before you actually can basically exterminate that population. And we might have got in the 90% range. So really close, but not enough. So the theory is right now that we have very little pine beetle growth in the province, but all it's gonna take is a couple of warmer winters again, and that population could be back up where it is. And if you want to see what mountain pine beetle looks like and what it can do to a landscape, just take a drive through Jasper National Park.
And are we seeing the pine beetle coming into Clearwater County very much?
Yeah, there were flights, I'm going to say 4 or 5 years ago. Most of it was into private land. And so there were quite a few private landowners that were seeing attacks of beetle. We didn't have a lot of attacks into the forest management agreement area. We put dispersal baits out, so we've got around 80 dispersal baits. And what those are is that we'll pick a township, we'll put a bait out there, and we're basically trying to attract beetle to that bait. So if there's beetles flying around, they're gonna get attracted to that bait, and then we'll go in, we'll look at those bait sites to see if there's been attacks of those trees or trees surrounding it. And if there are, it's an indication that the beetle was there. The difficulty with the mountain pine beetle is it's really hard to deal with because you only know where it was, you don't know where it is. Because the trees don't start to turn red until the beetle's already flown away. And they're only out of the tree for about a 2 week period. And they need temperatures above 20 degrees. And generally they'll start to fly about mid-July into August. And they only fly for about a 2 week period. So it's really hard to determine where that beetle is going and when they're flying. And so there's some research that's going on. There's a big research project that just started up through the University of Alberta with universities from across Canada engaged in trying to figure out what can we do to be better at managing the beetle population. And there's some really exciting stuff that's starting to come out. They've been using some bioagents in research basis, and they had some really good results showing that the bioagents, so what they would do is they would basically sprinkle some bioagent onto the female beetles. They'd go into a tree and they would basically contaminate the whole population of beetles that were in there and kill them off. So we're seeing some really good opportunities maybe to basically have some tools in our toolbox to manage that population. So we're hoping that we're gonna see some benefit of that, because the beetle's gonna be here. It's not going away, but we got a bit of a reprieve for right now.
And I know the county has a program visiting people to see if they have infections on their land and trying to take care of the trees
right
now too.
Yep.
I know West Fraser is a strong community supporter. I didn't ask this question before, but do you know some of the community projects that you guys are quite excited to participate in?
Locally, you know, every year we definitely try to support things like the food bank, the women's shelter, Boys and Girls Clubs, things that really support families and community just within our area here for sure. And we do other donations. Just yesterday, we donated some chips to the local high school so they could spruce up the flower beds and stuff around there for graduation, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. You know, and one of our contractors actually supplied the truck to take the chips there for free as well. So, yeah, we definitely love to do whatever we can to help the community. Sometimes we just need to know about it.
And I know West Fraser is also involved. I mean, because you're on the land so much, you're involved in a lot of trails as well, working with the Clearwater Trails Initiative, Baseline Mountain, and doing a little bit of work out in the Nordegg area as well. Tom, anything about trails that you can share?
Well, yeah, and it goes beyond trails, Jerry. So we've certainly been trying to, you know, I think it's no secret out here that we've got a bunch of motorized recreation. We've got a pile of people that come out from Edmonton and Calgary, and a lot of them really don't know how to camp. They love it when they come here, and we saw a real increase of that over during the pandemic and so on. And it's great that people are coming out to enjoy the forest and so on, but we really need to be educating those folks on how to properly camp. We certainly see a lot of problems with human waste on the landscape and so on. So we've been really trying to do our part, I guess, and trying to help manage that. We build a lot of roads for our operations, and we feel that some of those roads could facilitate ATV traffic rather than people running on some of the seismic lines that some people would call a trail. They weren't really designed for ATV use. And the problem with some of those trails is that they're great, they're sustainable, they're robust to the traffic of those ATVs on them on a regular basis, but then they drop down into a muskeg, and so people basically run through the muskeg and so on. That creates a lot of damage and so on. They're running through creeks. So we're quite engaged in trying to help with that through our road system, and if it's not on a road system, building trails that are sustainable, making sure that bridges are put in place. We're also helping out with camping through Friends of the East Slopes. We've been able to provide lots of funding for that group to open up some of the campgrounds that unfortunately were closed because the government didn't have the money available to manage those campgrounds. So that group has taken on a very active role in managing those campgrounds. And I think it's great because there's people that want to go out and random camp, but there's also a lot of people that feel more secure in a campground environment. And being able to open up those campgrounds again is a really good thing. The other thing I just sort of wanted to mention, it's not related to donations, but it somewhat is that, you know, right now we're talking about our operations here in Clearwater County, but I just want to point out that we've got a mill as well just in Sundry there that's just across the county line in Mountain View County. And so our woods group basically harvests trees and delivers trees not only to Bob's Mill, but also our mill down in Sundry. And there's about 250 people that work in that mill on a full-time basis. And we also have a wood treating plant there, and it's probably the largest wood treating plant in North America. And so anybody that has a fence post in their on their farm or on their acreage and so on probably came from our facility. And we're quite proud of that facility, and that one's been operating since 1987.
Okay, quite some time.
Yeah, you bet.
To finish off, is there anything that you'd like people to know about West Fraser or the LVO plant that we haven't spoken about?
Well, you know, to Tom's discussion about, you know, sustainability and you know, working out in the landscape out in the West Country and stuff like that, you know, for all of us, being in the wood or forestry industry is a lifestyle, not just a job. Mm-hmm. We all, you know, a lot of us like to go camping and like to be out there as well. So we want to ensure that we're making the right choices to ensure that's there for us and our kids in the future. So that's hugely important to us.
Great.
Yeah, that's a good point, Bob. And I guess, Jerry, the other thing I would add is that research is really important. So we're not responsible for wildlife management, but we know that our operations have a negative effect, but also a positive effect on the ecosystem out there. And we want to understand what we can do better. And so we're spending a lot of money on research. We're looking at grizzly bears. We've been looking at moose, elk, and so on. We're looking at the plant life that's out there, trying to understand what it is around our operations that is positive, negative, and what can we do to adjust things. And we've got a lot of good research projects that are telling us we need to change things, and we've been able to change some of our strategies, and they've had a very positive effect, and we'll continue to do that because it's the right thing to do.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And at some point we'll get this video completed and be able to show people pictures and hopefully a little bit of video of some of the activities that you guys do.
Thank you for the opportunity, Jerry.
Okay. Fantastic. Thanks for coming today, Jerry.